Hi, podcasters. This is Andy Studna, assistant editor with Applied Clinical Trials, and I'm here today with Lisa Henderson, our editor-in-chief. Today is a first for our podcast. We have two expert guests who recently authored an article featured in our October issue. Mary Costello, head of site and investigator network at Medable, and Pat Larrabee, CEO of Rochester Clinical Research.
Mary and Pat both have long careers in the clinical trials industry, and we're going to explore that as well as talk more about the article topic, why siteless trials won't work.
So on that note, thank you for joining us, Mary and Pat.
Thank you for having us.
Pleased to be here. Thank you.
So as Lisa just mentioned in her intro, you both have experience in clinical trials, albeit different parts of the industry. Mary in CROs and technology, and then Pat founding a clinical research site network in New York. If you could each describe two or three major differences you see in the industry from where you started compared to what's going on today. Mary, we can start with you on that one.
Thanks, Andy. And I guess my answers will reveal a little bit about my age, because I started in research before we really had used technology in any major way. So it was the advent of EDC. It was slowly starting, and that's now fairly ubiquitous throughout the industry. We didn't have the cloud, so there were separate laptops. If you went into an investigator site or a hospital, you might see a row of unique laptops all dedicated to different studies. I think those have been replaced by just unique usernames and passwords. But the role of technology and the way in which we've integrated technology is certainly a big difference. I think what hasn't changed, surprisingly, is we haven't seen as much of a difference from technology. We're still struggling with a lot of the same problems around enrollment, patient identification, timelines. And so I think the streamlining effect has not been helped in as much in the way that we want it to. And I think I'll get into that later. I'm sure we'll have questions about it. Why we thought it a body at Medable, like the site council, was so important. We needed to understand what is keeping sites and the industry from progressing with all this investment the industry's making. And let me pass it over to Pat.
Thanks, Mary. I've been in the industry, I guess I can date myself back to the triplicate NCR CRF pages. So I don't know if any of you ever have heard of that, but we used to transcribe the data from the patient record to, you know, triplicate paper. There were computers then, but we did hand transcribe data. And then it certainly hadn't done that for quite some time, but we have certainly seen lots of changes, more regulations, lots more delegation, like regulations, lots more technology, obviously. Although we have been fans of technology at our site and at many sites for a long time. But as Mary said, there certainly are a number of obstacles that we can identify fairly easily that have not made the technology a friend to all, I would say.
To follow on both your responses, could you also elaborate on the similarities or maybe some industry aspects you thought would have changed or evolved by now?
Boy, you know, at least 20 years ago, there were attempts to do what we are trying to do now, where you would see data collection and data entry in one process, where you would actually, there were attempts 20 years ago to use a laptop to enter a source in one place and have it also be automatically be the actual data collection tool as well. And here we are 20 years later, no further ahead in that, maybe a little bit further ahead, but still doing e-source entry in one computer, transcribing it to another computer system, which is just kind of crazy still. So when that means you're doing multiple trials, you've got multiple different systems for each study. There's some things that simply have not improved. And that's, you know, we have one study that Mary's heard me talk about this, where we had more portals than patients. You know, we had 8 different portals to sign into for the study and 4 patients. So it just gets to be where you see technology is not really helping that particular study or that particular the site in that regard because of the challenges with each portal having some difficulty.
Yeah, I would to build on to that, Pat. I think, you know, the similarities, what hasn't changed is we are still grappling with the same problems as how do we find the right patients? I think it's the fundamental question underpinning research. We now have the knowledge, I think, of different ways that hasn't yet maybe delivered on its promise. The idea of AI, the idea of data mining, the idea of using that data to geolocate. But I think we're still struggling with, we have a very human connection that is an integral part of making clinical trials successful, influences someone's ability or decision to consent, and certainly their ability to stay in the trial. So using technology just in and of itself, I think, is not the full answer. It should be part of the answer. And I think the similarities are still, what is that right balance to the personal and the automated or tech response? And that continues. And I think we get more sophisticated tools and we get more sophisticated about the responses. But at the end, every trial still goes off with a problem around enrollment and deadlines around enrollment in the vast majority of trials today.
And the, you know, the coordination of trials has not gotten simpler with more technology. And that's, I think, one of the crux of the issues. What simply happens at the sites now is that the coordinators, the clinical staff, are coordinating multiple pieces of technology across multiple different vendors without really any, not necessarily the background to even do that. And no one seems to be the right person. It's kind of hard to figure out who does know how to make all these different technology pieces work together, because they come separately without coordination or integration. So that has actually taken those tools that were supposed to help us and make them be tools that actually hinder the progress of the study.
Okay, so now I'd like to get into the terminology of clinical trial sites more specifically. So early on, we had the remote trial, literally called remote, which Pfizer initiated some time ago, and then virtual trials and siteless trials. So from your point of view, Pat, this one's for you. Did the terminology cause a problem for you as a CEO of an established site?
Well, if you say siteless, that sort of, and you're a site, that what is that? What kind of reaction might you think we'd have? It tends to strike a little bit of fear in the hearts of the site when you think, siteless? What do you mean? You don't need us? What does that do to the 50 or so employees and the system we have built over 25 years to do quality research for our volunteers and collect quality data? So if you say you don't need us, which is what siteless implies, that does strike some panic in the heart of the sites, I think. I think all the words mean the same thing, but they really don't tell the whole story. So decentralized, hybrid, remote, virtual, I don't think there's a difference, and people use them all interchangeably for meeting many different things, even when there's just one particular aspect of it where perhaps there's a wearable involved. They say we're doing a decentralized trial when in fact that is not the case. So there's not really been any standardization of the terminology to date, and that is, I think, causing some more difficulties for all of us. We aren't really using the terms all the same way, and the rules and the indications for what are they best used for. The pandemic certainly opened a lot of people's eyes and has brought this topic to the forefront in a much greater way than we had expected and are seeing. And it's still, some folks didn't realize how the changes happened during the pandemic, but it was a really good thing in some ways for the virtual trial, decentralized trial arena, to see quite a few changes. Mary, you probably have some thoughts on that as well.
I do. I mean, we've kind of settled on the term decentralized trial because that's the term the FDA has indicated they prefer. And of course, like Pat, I'm in complete agreement that the term siteless trial, if you're going to kind of cut out or imply that you're cutting out your key stakeholder, that's going to really turn off a certain sector of the population. And virtual sounds more like a trial that doesn't have as much grounding in the site or any interaction, that implies it kind of takes place all over the, net, for instance, which often is not the case. And then hybrid, I know some people just don't like that term. So yeah. We do need to standardize. But I think the idea of driving convenience and flexibility in the conduct of clinical research with still preserving appropriate oversight is not a new idea and is welcomed by all stakeholders, patients, sites, everyone. And like Pat, I think the pandemic was good to kind of push everyone, an industry that's very good at repeating the same behavior because everyone following a recipe, to now kind of throw it out and say you have to cook whatever's in your cabinet and make it work. And we did. It's important we don't lose that, but also learn from it and re-enter this market, better and stronger as a result.
So Mary, your title is Head of Site and Investigator Networks at Medibol, and your company offers a decentralized platform, which you mentioned has gained ground during the pandemic. So how does your role fit into this new terminology? And we're going to talk more about the terminology in a minute, but how does your role fit into that?
Yeah, thanks for that question. And actually, I think my title may be evolving to be the head of site success, but I think it goes back to a fundamental that I'm not the technologist in the group, but I am the person Medable has brought on to help ensure that the voice of the sites and the needs of the sites take a front and center role in everything that Medable does. And that's not just the tech, but of course, it's a key part of the platform. You know, we can't continue to design tech where the workflows and the needs of the site are an afterthought. We really have to develop that tech around their workflow so we're supportive instead of disruptive. Disruptive in this case is not a good term, although I know everyone loves to throw that around about tech. But if you're making the sites less efficient, we're not doing our job. But it also applies to things like, how do we train? How do we support? What's our help desk function? How do we share? Many sites, I was astonished to learn this, when tech is brought in and the training takes place, it just launches into the training of your, you know, login. Nobody shows them what the tech is actually supposed to do or provide a demo of it to begin with. So people are flying blind. And my role is really to work with associated partner sites, networks, academic medical center, anyone playing in that field of research that's interested in helping to improve technology to help Medable in our journey to really ensure that we do it right. So I'll pass that over. Maybe you have a follow-on comment, Pat, to that.
I think that, you know, the issue here is we really do want to do it right, and we want to have technology work with us and not work against us, which is, I think, what, as Mary was pointing out, we often have no clue what's going to be happening with the technology. That is the study that had the 8 portals. There was no advance warning there were 8 portals at all until we're underway with the study. So you may get training on 1 or 2 of the portals, but no real clue about what you're supposed to do with the rest of them. And then when they don't work in your mid-trial, Mary alluded to the difficulties with enrollment. Well, that's going to affect enrollment if you can't actually figure out how to get the person in the study because you can't help the DEXA site upload the data to it because it won't work. So you really have to make sure that the training, that the technology that you're supposed to be using actually does work and that the sites are able to use it. So this will work if we all work together to make sure the technology and that decentralized approach are actually tried and true when they work together with the site.
Well, you make a good point, Pat. You know, when you described earlier about how when you start, it would be rows of computers, or you said that, Mary, but regardless, you both, you know, there was just rows of computers, but now you have rows of portals, you know, and just like, what's that term when you just force fit that old process into a new technology and it's not using the technology to the fullest?
That's right. And we know it exists out there because you can do it in other, you know, other areas with other parts of your life. You're able to do it in a more simple way. So you always think of it. And Mary could remember the example I used to give when we were involved in clinical supplies, that, you know, Zappos would tell me when my shoes were coming, but the clinical supply people would never tell me that when the drug that's critical was coming. So there certainly is technology out there that can do things in a better way. And that's true in the clinical trial industry as well. And we tend to be reluctant to go to the next step with things. We kind of dabble in it without actually taking a full advantage of what the features are that are out there.
So I guess we can segue into, because it sounds like it probably is going to touch on this, but Mary, Medable recently launched its Site Network Council, and you had mentioned that earlier. And Pat's Rochester Clinical Research is one of the 8 founding members. So can you describe more of the goal of the council?
I can. And Pat has alluded, we have been collaborators for a number of years over different companies or times in my career. And so when I came to Medable with this goal in mind that we were going to be sure to include the perspective and the voice of the site in what we did, one of the ways of achieving that was a Site Network Council. And these are people that represent the diversity that exist in clinical research. So it's diversity in geography, diversity in experience, diversity in age, gender, location, populations they represent, to make sure we didn't define this through the lens of one person's experience, although there are commonality in themes. And that's primarily how we have used the council to figure in and hone in on those themes, because it's confusing to people to listen in. They think every site is different. But you do see some common challenges, frustrations, as well as best practices and opportunity to learn from each other. We've also expanded the idea of the council to almost be a bench of contributors. There's been a lot of enthusiasm. Everyone on the council participating in any way is not doing it for any other reason than they're hoping to make the industry better and they have a passion for it. And so they're willing to lend their probably most precious commodity is their time. coupled with their experience to help us try to make the best decisions in what we do. And Pat, I'm hoping you can maybe amplify with just some of your experience.
We really appreciate the opportunity to be part of that. Sites like ours often feel like we don't have a voice in some of the technology that is given to us to use. And so when a company like Medable offers the opportunity to share with other sites and to learn from them and to give input on the technologies that will be coming forward for sites to use, it is really rewarding and makes us feel heard too, because often it feels like we're just kind of this little voice in the wilderness that no one's listening to. But yet it's a pretty important part of the process, because without us, the patients need to be part of this research process. They're critical, and we're the ones that find the patients and enroll them and make sure they're safe and have their evaluations done properly. So it is important that we all feel heard and that we are able to have the software that meets the needs of everyone in the best possible way. So we appreciate the opportunity to be heard. Thank you, Mary, for giving us that voice.
Will more companies be joining the council, Mary?
Yes, they will. And as a matter of fact, that release generated a lot of interest. We continue to come across groups, and we are adding a European arm as well. So right now it's been North American based, but we'll be adding in colleagues from across the country, but probably we'll keep them separate just from time zones and just the logistics of that. But again, we want to be sure that we're representing the face of research.
So now we're going to talk some more about the terminology, because of course, as editors, Andy and I spend a lot of time trying to choose the best words, you know, that fit the sentence or the headline and such. And as you pointed out, sightless, Pat, is just wrong.
Pretty awful.
But then Mary, you said something and then we have decentralized, and Pat had said, well, if it's a wearable, if it's just one wearable on a trial, does that truly make a trial decentralized? And then you had just mentioned, Mary, that some people don't like the term hybrid. Could you expand on that?
You know, I think they just react. I think it's a general rejection of a lot of terminology that kind of leaves the people out of it, even decentralized to a certain extent. You know, at least you have the FDA blessing there. But I think at the heart of this, and, you know, I saw some of the thoughts here are, why did Pat and I put this article together around the future is not sightless trials. It is more this idea of the human connection that's at the heart of trials, that when we start talking in tech terms or in hybrid or sightless or decentralized, where are the people? And the trial is powered by two sets of people, the sites that support it and the patients or the volunteers that participate. And, you know, it kind of becomes a turnoff, I think, to the industry when we don't kind of celebrate, acknowledge, and support that human connection. And people participating in research get a lot of care and tending and attention that's maybe missing from even healthcare today, as we've changed to, you know, new models of 7-minute visits. You know, people sharing family stories and looking forward to coming in. Pat's community, I know, has retirees. Sometimes this is what they look forward to, coming to the site and sharing time with people. And so I think language that removes people from it, we have to kind of scratch our head at that one. So you don't want sightless, and you don't want patientless, but you don't want humanless, you know?
Yeah, right.
Probably not even a word, speaking of words.
That's right. I mean, there certainly is a place for what we're talking about, and that the pandemic made that very clear, that there were some visits that you don't need to come into an office for in every trial. I've been on a recent committee with the FDA and the DCT that comes out of Duke. There's a collaborative arrangement with Duke and the FDA to rewrite. They've been working for about 10 years on the concept of decentralized trials. And I was at a 2-day seminar with that as one of the site representatives. And the focus the FDA has is they really feel this is a very good solution for the orphan drugs and where there's a 600-mile commute to the nearest center that may be actually doing a trial in a rare disease situation, or in situations like the pandemic. There are some others who do not feel it's the be-all, end-all for all research, but that the hybrid, where there's certain visits there, where there's not a need to go to the center, where there's no labs being drawn, there's no drug being dispensed, it's simply a follow-up visit, where it's very appropriate to do a remote visit for that, whether it's a televisit or a telehealth visit, et cetera. That's an extremely appropriate type of a visit to do for it. So that may be what we would refer to as hybrid. But again, as Mary said, that's the intent of that type of trial. But what you call it is still up for debate, apparently. But I think that's the intent, the true appropriate use of this type of decentralized research. And I think we're going to see more of that in the future. What we are hesitant to see is when we see some sponsors rushing to think there's a transfer of cost or a cost savings when you cut out the site or you cut out some people and you can just have the CRO hire a local nursing, visiting nurse service and take the drug right to the patient. And you don't even need to have this site and this infrastructure, et cetera. And they'll have nurses that are going to go do the, you know, dressing changes on a sick patient who's discharged, and then they'll go do a research visit in between. That model is probably not going to be the model that works for the future for the trials, the type of trial work that we're seeing. So there's a whole gamut of different experiences and different things that are being bandied about as we all have a different perspective on what's going to work in the future. And lots of folks are coming to it with different ideas. But I think we're still in the early stages of this. We did learn a lot through the pandemic. And I think there are a lot of things that are going to work in the future. But we have to get a bit more standardization on what our terms are and what we see the FDA's interests are and what's going to work out best for the industry overall.
And I'd just like to add kind of a comment to Pat's point, because I completely agree. I think it holds true for healthcare. As for research, if we're to take these modalities that we're offered to provide convenience, flexibility, and drive retention or oversight in them, whether they be a telehealth visit, and then turn that around to be a cost saver, where we really take the reduce the payment out of the site visit or the healthcare visit, what you're going to see inevitably happen is people are going to reject them because you've just had a huge reduction in the money that they were making in the way that they were planning. I've already seen that happen in healthcare. That I think that changed during the pandemic, where they reimbursed at healthcare the telehealth visits the same as in person. But previously, they made it almost unsustainable. So people who were willing to adopt the technology were kind of penalized for being early adopters. I really think we have to avoid doing that to, you know, cannibalizing our own market here. We have to recognize sites. Many of them are small businesses and they're built on models, and we have to work with them to adapt to a new model. But let's not make it a movement to just cutting cost. I think we should look into efficiency, retention, faster enrollment, faster timelines as our long-term benefits and work together to get there. But it concerns me when I hear it all about cutting cost.
Yes. And actually, when you actually look at some of the issues, it really isn't going to save cost to do drug shipment. Some of the vendors are actually more expensive than what a site would cost to dispense drug to. Some of the things that we're looking at aren't cost savings. So you have to really look long and hard at what the end result is of some of what they're trying to do.
That's a really good point. So putting it together as a holistic, I mean, it's a learning curve right now, and trying not to, you know, go too far in one direction where you lose the patient centricity aspect to be a total, like you say, sanitized term, decentralized. We're in a different time, but it's kind of interesting that there's, like you said, so many ideas out there. It's kind of going to be difficult to navigate. Maybe not difficult, but building the trial right up front so that everyone's needs are put into that equation. So that was the genesis of your article, though, right? Because of these,
yes,
these terms and the frustration.
Well, and you know, that you can just say siteless and you'll strike fear in about 300 research sites.
Yeah, exactly.
It's nothing like causing panic.
Well, and I do think, you know, Pat and I have talked about this topic for 10 years, really around the time the Pfizer remote trial was going on and driving so much coverage. But, you know, we looked at each other and said, when has a patient ever self-consented and self-managed? And, you know, we're just such a long way off from that. And then we moved as an industry to the patient centricity model, which I think is great for the industry. However, let's not skip kind of the core stakeholder that sits there in the middle, which is that site. You know, the site are the ones often that identify, obviously, interact, consent, manage, retain, and helps patients complete the study so that sponsor companies and by extension humanity gets data on drugs that could change people's lives. But the idea that now we're just kind of moving into this age of technology, you know, this is not, I don't think, Netflix disrupting Blockbuster. You know, nobody was said, I love to go to my video store because I love the clerks. You know, it's so nice to wait in line or drive and circle around for a parking space. There is still at the heart of this is that relationship. It's the people that I used to fly back from Texas to Pennsylvania for my dentist for 5 years. Can you believe that? But I felt so better taken care of and that I was unwilling. And I think people bring that same connection to the staff in a study. It's just amazing to hear the stories I hear from the study coordinators, particularly of their relationships with the patients. So instead of looking to disrupt that, let's look to capitalize on that. And let's look to build technology that's going to come through and it's going to allow actually the coordinator to spend more time on the person and less time on the tech piece of this or the administrative part of it. So that's really my passion here. I'm so happy to find Pat, who is a fellow traveler and who lives this every day to kind of keep me honest and keep me focused. But she has stories, wonderful stories, and also horrible stories that go both sides.
I think we got through all the questions. I'm not sure if there was anything we didn't touch on.
The only thing you didn't touch on that we really want to tell you about, what are the key needs of the right software at the site? And that was something really we want to tell you because people need to hear that. Because the key, this just happens every day and it's so challenging, is some interoperability and the systems that would talk to one another would be lovely. And some ability on the part of the sites to be able to edit or control some of the systems, because what happens when we get some software systems, of which we have many, and you know, we're going to be working with 4 different e-source systems right now, which are, they're wonderful, but when we have an amendment, which we have a protocol right now with 18 amendments, the e-source system needs to be edited. And, you know, it takes 3 weeks for the vendor to edit the e-source system, but the amendment has to go into effect tomorrow. So you know, that's the kind of dilemma that we get put in. That's one of the challenges with technology, where things change very fast. And when I had a paper source, I could change that paper source in a half an hour, but now I have to wait 3 weeks to change my source through the computer system, but it has to go into effect today. So those are the types of things that are really the technology folks don't think about when you really have to use technology and research. It has to be very nimble and very easy to edit. So, you know, APIs are really wonderful, and intuitive software would be wonderful and easy to navigate and fast. Those are just a few of the things we need. We don't ask for much, do we?
Not at all. You wouldn't think so, right?
Oh, it's that's like the moon, because we don't have a single one of those things on our ask list in any of the software that we have. So that is the moon and the stars and the sun and everything. So, and those are all the things that we kind of need. But that's what I had to get my 2 cents in on that. Thank you.
Definitely. I'm sure we could talk about more of those, but we probably need another podcast.
Probably. Yes. Yes. I mean, the stories I could tell will turn your hair gray.
Well, thank you, Pat. And thank you, Mary, so much for your time.
Yes. Thank you, Pat. Thank you, Mary.
Thank you all. It was fun.
Yes, it was. Good to talk to you guys.